today, will huge interventions from governments, including here in the UK, help to limit the impact of a looming coronavirus recession?
My name's Emma and I run a street food business.
My name's Dave. I run a chauffeur service.
We would expect the summer season to be very busy. Now with the uncertainty of what's happening, we have no work.
We have already laid off one member of staff, but I can see us having to lay off everybody.
We're not sure how things are going to pan out, whether we will be able to continue going. There is no security there for self-employed people, for small businesses.
We just haven't the work to offer the drivers, as our diary is totally empty at the moment.
The world is gearing up for a global recession that will have a very human cost. It's not just the mighty airlines and hotel chains that are going to suffer, or even just the pubs, clubs and theatres Boris Johnson has asked us not to go to. It's also millions in insecure work, including low-paid self-employed people and small business owners like Emma and Dave. Coronavirus isn't just devastating for our health, but our economy too, leading to a series of unprecedented interventions.
Very big, bold package.
Yesterday, Donald Trump said the US would start sending checks to American adults thought to be worth at least $1,000.
Nous mettons en place un dispositif exceptionnel.
Emmanuel Macron said he wouldn't let a single French business go under. And in Britain, there was £330 billion of guaranteed loans for companies, tax relief, and a three-month mortgage holiday for those in need.
I can announce today an unprecedented package of government-backed and guaranteed loans to support business to get through this.
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, how coronavirus infected the global economy. Larry Elliott, economics editor at The Guardian.
Breaking news from Wall Street in the wake of the coronavirus crisis.
On Thursday last week, we saw something really dramatic happened to the markets as a result of coronavirus.
Stock markets opened in a state of high anxiety, which gave way to panic.
They opened and almost immediately stocks nosedived. In America, the decline was so steep it triggered a circuit breaker that halts trading to try to curb panic selling.
Is this not a public health emergency? And now that's turned into an economic crisis.
Across there in Europe, the value plunged by 9%. They called it Black Thursday. And I guess it had echoes of the last time there was such a massive fall during the global financial crash. Is what's happening to the world economy now similar to 2008?
Well, it's quite simple, really. In 2008, there was a financial virus that got into the global financial system, the global banking system, and this time we've got an actual virus which has got into the global economy and it's shutting it down bit by bit. There is going to be a very savage recession. Recession is where output falls in two consecutive quarters. That's the official definition of a recession. So an economy, instead of growing, which it does most of the time, starts to shrink.
And obviously notable that the year in which we're comparing this to is 2008. When we had the financial crash, how does this compare to what happened economically back then?
It's exactly the same effects. Closing down output, shutting factories, stopping people from going out and doing things they do in their regular lives. That's what a recession does. A recession is normally a fall in people's living standards, and that's what's going to happen this time.
And it's taken economies over the world years to recover from the 2008 crash. How did banks and governments globally deal with it?
There was a coordinated response to it in 2008-9, central banks threw the kitchen sink at it. They cut interest rates almost as far as they could go. They started a process known as quantitative easing, which is where they really just created electronic money and flooded the banking system with it so that the banks had plenty of money to lend.
With no silver bullet for the economy, the Fed fired a shotgun blast. In slashing its benchmark interest rate to the lowest level ever,
the Fed moved its benchmark rate into new territory, cutting the rate banks charge each other to a range of 0 to 0.25%.
And governments did their bit by raising public spending and cutting taxes. And it was coordinated internationally through the G20.
What state in 2019 was the global economy in before coronavirus hit?
The problem with the recovery that happened after 2008-9 was that it was an incomplete recovery. It only really affected global financial markets, which did very well out of the policy of central banks of having very low interest rates for a very long time. What they didn't do was actually change the fundamentals of the economy. They didn't boost investment. They didn't boost wages. So when the coronavirus started to become a factor in late 2019, early 2020, the global economy was really not in a particularly good shape to deal with the crisis.
Was there any way that they could have predicted this, prepared for it perhaps?
I don't think policymakers could have predicted COVID-19, but they certainly should have been prepared for something to go wrong. I mean, on balance, there is one global downturn every 10 years, or at least there has been for the last 50 years. And it was so predictable that the financial markets were going to take one hell of a beating at some point because they were riding so high on very little other than very cheap money. I've been saying for a long, long time that a crisis is coming. It was just happened to be COVID-19, but it could and probably would have been something else.
Now that we're here and market prices are telling us that a recession is becoming more likely, what are the immediate measures governments can take to respond?
So central banks have again stepped up to the plate first. The Federal Reserve in the United States has cut interest rates as far as they can go. The Bank of England's done the same here. Other central banks around the world are doing the same sort of thing. They're providing plenty of cash for the bank. But that's not going to be enough because this is a health problem. So the next phase is going to be left to governments. They are going to have to find a way of actually preventing this very serious recession from turning into a second Great Depression. And so that means things like putting more money into welfare systems to make sure when people are laid off that they've got more money in their pockets. It means ensuring that essentially quite sound firms, sandwich bars, restaurants, that are essentially good businesses, don't go under in the next 6 to 9 months when they're facing this short-term heavy drop in consumer spending.
And across the world, which industries are being affected badly by the virus already?
You can see industries which are affected very quickly. So anything that involves international travel.
The epidemic has led to an 80% drop in traffic at China's busiest airports.
Across the UK, the eerie sight of airports turning into parking lots.
Pretty much everything is going to be affected, from the biggest factory down to the smallest sandwich bar.
And so China, a huge economy, must have been really badly hit.
Most of Hubei province, the epicenter of the coronavirus, is now under lockdown.
Manufacturing in China has slumped due to the COVID-19 outbreak.
China's become, in the last 20 years, a factory of the world. It produces so many products that we now use in the West, from televisions to iPhones, you know, to toys, to clothes. So the first impact of it was felt in China, because that's where COVID-19 started. So what happened was China put large parts of its economy into quarantine. Production from China fell. We've seen already that the manufacturing figures from China in the last couple of days have been really, really grim.
It went into this crisis in a really strong position economically.
Well, not as strong as people think, actually. I mean, it's a bit of a Potemkin village, the Chinese economy, I think. You know, it looks good from the outside, but actually behind the scenes, it's not been quite so good as it looks. The government inflates the real growth rates, probably running at about half the 6% the government says it is. And an awful lot of China's economic miracle in recent years has been based around the same sort of principles as the whole global economy. Lots of cheap money, lots of investment in factories that are not especially profitable. And the government there has been trying to actually put the economy on a sounder, more sustainable footing in recent years.
Okay, that's really interesting, because what the Chinese did very quickly, well before the stage that we're currently at with more than 1,000 cases in the UK, was take some pretty draconian measures.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they shut down the whole of Wuhan.
Within the epicenter of the deadly coronavirus, an eerie silence. The streets of Wuhan, China, a city 11 million people call home, mostly empty.
This is what you can do if you've got a totalitarian state. You can actually lock people away in their homes and stop them from coming out. And they do seem to have actually dealt with the spread of the virus that way. But it's quite a drastic measure. And the Chinese figures for retail sales, for industrial production, for investment show that. I mean, there've been big, big falls in all those three categories.
As the battle to contain the virus continues, fears about the impact of the coronavirus have now reached the economy. Hundreds of billions of dollars have been wiped off the value of leading Chinese companies.
Keeping hundreds of millions of people at home, which is what they did in China, must have been crippling for the economy.
People expected there to be a big hit to the Chinese economy, but even so, they've been surprised by just how brutal the downturn has been. I mean, the unemployment rate's gone up to 6.2%, totally crippling for the economy. And that's a foretaste of what we're going to get in the rest of the world, because those sort of policies that the Chinese have been implementing are now being exported to the West.
So what can the Chinese leader Xi Jinping do about it? What economic measures is he bringing in?
I think there'll be a big stimulus package. And on Monday, it announced it was going to inject $14.3 billion into the economy, which will just be the start. $14.3 billion is not a lot of money when you're as big an economy as China. There will be more to come.
So that's China. And we've also seen another huge economy, the US, also fairly prosperous, showing signs of struggle too. What effects have there been there over the past week?
The US is in some ways in better shape than a lot of Western countries. Growth is stronger. It's got very low unemployment. But it's seen the impact of it quite dramatically increase in the last few weeks.
The Dow sank nearly 3,000 points, its worst day since 1987, and its second biggest single day percentage loss in history. Another brutal day on Wall Street, the Dow sinking over 1,400 points, officially entering bear market territory.
Among those industries facing job cuts right now, ports, bakeries, travel agencies, gig workers, and entry-level employees.
New York, Los Angeles, Las Vegas are pretty much being quarantined. US consumers are starting to take fright. There have been lots of pictures of shopping malls being empty as consumers are concerned about getting the virus.
Tonight, a state of emergency declared in New York as the coronavirus spreads across the country.
Economic policymakers must do what we can to ease hardship caused by the disruptions to the economy and to support a swift return to normal.
In some ways, the US is quite vulnerable because it's got large numbers of poor people who don't have any health cover. It doesn't have a particularly strong social safety net. So if people lose their jobs, they've got very little to get by on. And that encourages people to carry on working, even if they might have got the virus, which adds to the spread of it. So the US is in a way a very vulnerable country. And that's one reason the financial markets there have gone into reverse so sharply in recent days. That's been marked by a complete change of tack from Donald Trump to actually being, you know, full on national emergency.
Today I am officially declaring a national emergency. Two very big words.
It will have a massive impact on the US economy, and that of course will have an impact on the rest of the global economy, because the US is, it's always been seen as the consumer of last resort for the global economy. So if China was producing loads of stuff, the US consumer would buy it all. If the US consumer stops buying it, then factories in China are going to be facing mothballing of production and so on. And that's going to have a sort of ripple effect back into the Chinese economy.
Yeah, well, frightening if you think about the biggest supplier and the biggest demander, yeah, both going down.
Yeah, exactly. You've got the two biggest economies. One produces a lot of the stuff, or the other one consumes a lot of the stuff. If they're both in recession, that's a very serious state of affairs for the global economy.
But of course, Donald Trump has also stopped flights to and from most of Europe.
To keep new cases from entering our shores, we will be suspending all travel from Europe to the United States for the next 30 days.
initially 26 countries. Now it's been extended to include the UK. Why didn't he coordinate that flight ban with other G7 members and with the EU?
Well, the reason is that the level of global cooperation is much weaker than it was in 2008-09. We've got a very vulnerable global financial system. We've got a very vulnerable global economic system, and we've got virtually no global cooperation at the moment. You know, if you look around the world, the two biggest oil producers, Saudi Arabia and Russia, are involved in an oil war. They're both pumping as much oil as they possibly can and driving down the price. You've got the world's two biggest economies, China and the US, in the middle of a massive trade war. What's clearly needed is some global cooperation and coordination of policy. And yet there's rarely been a time in the last 70 or 80 years when global cooperation has been as weak as it currently is. And I'm afraid that Trump has made things worse rather than better by his unilateral action. So each country is now effectively doing what they did in the 1930s and just having, you know, go it alone policies.
And one big impact of that lack of coordination from Donald Trump and that decision to ban flights is an impact on EU economies.
EU economies are really at the sharp end. I mean, the virus is worse in Europe than it is in Asia. And over the coming weeks, we will start to revise up how painful we think this is going to be for the European economies. And they are also starting to close in on themselves. The Germans have imposed travel bans into Germany. The Austrians have banned gatherings of more than five people. Spain and Italy are essentially quarantined economies. I mean, for a country like Spain, which relies so heavily on tourism, this summer is going to be really, really hard.
As the number of cases and deaths rises sharply, Italy faces growing isolation with thousands of flights cancelled and stringent controls on its borders with Austria and Slovenia. And schools and universities are closed. Italians are being advised simply to stay at home.
In a desperate bid to stop the disease from spreading, the entire country is now in a lockdown. It's the most severe restriction on movement in Italy since World War II.
And if we just look at Italy, which arguably is at the very centre of the epidemic, I mean, this is Europe's most indebted country. Tourism accounts for 13% of its GDP, and the entire country has closed down. How will it possibly get through this crisis?
It's going to be a real struggle. I mean, if there was ever a country in Europe that you'd want not to get COVID-19, it would be Italy. I mean, it's had virtually no increases in living standards in 20 years. It's had four recessions since 2008-09. This is the fifth. As you say, it's got high levels of borrowing, high levels of debt. The only thing the government can do is actually spend more money, throw some money at it. But even then, it's going to be really tough. Italy's started to have government measures to help homeowners. So it's given people a mortgage holiday. That's quite a sensible step, I think. Other governments are doing different things. The Germans have got a system of wage subsidies so that if people are put on part-time working, the government tops up their income.
300 milliards d'euros.
In France, President Macron took to the airwaves to pledge 300 billion euros to make sure no company goes bust because of the virus.
I just want to zoom in on the UK, if that's all right. I mean, just to start, what state was the UK economy in before the virus hit?
Since 2008-09, we've had virtually no real improvement in wages. We've had the weakest investment of any country in the G7, Brexit. And the referendum in 2016 hasn't helped there. And the economy barely grew in 2019. So the economy was not in great shape going into this.
And now we're facing what could be a really deep recession. What is the human cost of that?
All recessions are painful. This recession is going to be painful because there's going to be a very, very sharp fall in output and a probably quite big increase in unemployment. And we don't have a particularly generous social safety net. I mean, one of the things that's happened in the last 10 years is that first a coalition government, then the Conservative government has made the welfare benefit system much less generous. And, you know, one of the other big changes we've seen in the last 10 or 15 years is a big growth in self-employment, gig economy workers who are not covered by company sick pay schemes. They are incredibly vulnerable.
Have businesses in the UK already started to suffer or even close?
I'm sure there are many, many businesses that are hanging on by their fingertips. I mean, if you think about the fact that fewer people are coming in to work on a train, that affects the train companies clearly, but it also affects the sandwich bars at the station, and it affects the food and drink companies that supply those sandwich bars with their bread and their cheese and their meat and their tomatoes. I mean, it affects the farms, it affects the dairies, it affects everybody. I mean, it ripples down through the economy. There's been an awful lot of attention paid to the problems of the airline companies. I mean, they're a big and powerful lobby, but there are lots of small companies, lots of small businesses who are going to go to the wall here unless this is sorted out very, very quickly.
Stay with us to find out how concerns about all the groups that Larry has been talking about led to unprecedented action by governments last night. Larry, we're calling you back because we've just seen the US and then the UK take massive steps to try to shore up their economies. Let's start with the US. What did they do?
The two big things that Donald Trump announced were, one, a tax deferral period so people can defer paying their tax up to $1 million. That's going to have quite an impact on people's cash flow. And even more impressively, he said that he was going to start mailing checks. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said that he was going to start mailing checks to each American citizen of around perhaps even more than $1,000 a head. I mean, that's quite a lot of money and quite a departure.
I mean, you say impressively. Is that a good move in your eyes?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely the right thing to be doing. I mean, people talk about this as so-called helicopter drops of money. You know, Milton Friedman once talked about the way to deal with a serious slump was to fire up the helicopters, fill them full of cash and drop it on the population and let them spend it. And effectively, that is what this is. Trump and Mnuchin have decided to just firebomb the American economy with money in order to see it through what is going to be a very, very difficult period. So I think it is absolutely the right thing to do.
And that possibility of $1 trillion injection into the corporate bond market, how significant could that be?
Well, I don't think that's going to be enough in itself. I think that, you know, keeping the markets liquid and keeping them operating is a good thing. And I think actually what's needed here is more direct help to businesses and to families and to households. And that's really where we're going now.
And within an hour of that announcement in the US, which, as you say, was kind of jaw-dropping, we had Boris Johnson come out flanked by his Chancellor, Rishi Sunak. What did they do?
Well, essentially, Rishi Sunak said that last week's budget, which was, at the time was considered to be quite a big deal, was not really up to the job of dealing with the scale of the crisis. So that was a £12 billion package. Today, he announced an extra £20 billion worth of spending measures and an additional £330 billion worth of loan guarantees. He also made more generous many of the measures that he announced in the budget. So there was a cash grant for the smallest businesses of £3,000 announced in the budget. That's now £10,000. There was a business rates holiday for firms in the leisure hospitality industry if they had a business rates of under valuation of under £51,000 a year, they would get a business rates holiday. Now it's open to everybody. I mean, these are quite significant measures, and it was quite clear from Sunak that more is to come. This is effectively part one of the UK government's response aimed squarely at businesses, but he said that he was having discussions with trade unions and others for a package in the coming days, which would affect workers and their incomes. So I expect there to be something, if not the same as Trump's package, somewhat similar in that there will be some support for people's earnings and their jobs over the coming days.
And we began this by talking about 2008 and the financial crisis, when huge sums, actually not as huge as we're talking about now, but nevertheless huge, were used to shore up banks. I mean, the difference this time is it's not just the banks that are suffering. It seems like every level in the economy is being hit.
Well, you can't totally mitigate the impact of what's happening here. I mean, this is not 2008. It's far more serious than 2008. In 2008, it was essentially a banking problem. Once you got the banks up and running, once you'd recapitalize them, given them some money, put some money in their coffers, and got them working again, you'd pretty much solve the problem. This time, you know, the virus has got really deep into the economy, and you know, looking at the numbers that we're seeing coming out and the forecasts for the economy, they're of a magnitude that we've never seen in modern times. I mean, much worse than 2008, much worse even than the Great Depression. So governments are really have got to throw everything they can at this problem. Otherwise, they're going to turn what's already going to be a very, very serious recession into something as colossal as we saw in the 1930s. I've covered many recessions in my time as an economics journalist, but very rarely has the economy come to a shuddering halt in the way that it clearly has over the last week. Most recessions creep up on you quite slowly, and you don't actually realise half the time that you're in one until you're well into it. This time, all the clichés about the economy hitting a wall or falling off a cliff are absolutely right. That's exactly what's happening. You go out into the streets and you can almost feel the tumbleweed rolling through the streets. I mean, it's just desperate. And I think that, you know, governments have realised that. This is not just a health emergency. It's a full-scale economic emergency. And it's no accident that both the Chancellor and the Prime Minister were talking in terms of this being a wartime situation. And that's really what it is. In wartime, governments don't bother about things like the budget deficit. They just focus on the overriding aim, which is to win the war. And winning the war this time is a two-pronged fight. It's fighting the virus and fighting the threat of a Great Depression.
That was our economics editor, Larry Elliott. Do read his coverage of this, along with political editor Heather Stewart, on the website. Do also keep up with all the developments on the Guardian live blog. Among the many coronavirus stories yesterday was the news that Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe has been temporarily released from prison in Iran. I'd like to do a big shout out to all the brilliant Today in Focus producers. Like many of you, we are starting to work from home, which is clearly a challenge when you normally have a studio in which to produce the podcast. But we're going to strive to maintain the same quality and keep you updated on this extraordinary story, as well as other things that remain hugely important. On Fridays, Rachel or I will be speaking to different Guardian journalists on a particular theme linked to the outbreak, and we'd love to include input from you. This Friday, I'll be speaking to my colleague Zoe Williams about coping with self-isolation and what that's going to mean for our relationships, for parenting, for loneliness, for fitness, and many other things. If you'd like to send me any thoughts, questions, and experiences to include, then please tweet me at Anoushka Astana as soon as possible. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Hannah Moore, Jessica Murray, and Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.